Welcome back in studio, the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake the Snake Schultz. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. I think we're 9:60 in Calgary and 6:50 in Vancouver as well.
Yeah, we're shows at a different time every week, day this week, so.
Yeah.
I'm having a tough time keeping track
of where the hell we are. 11:69 in Nepal.
Can you just keep us steady somewhere? You're the producer. Don't you have any pull around here?
I'm producing a vacation in a couple days, buddy.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Dan Murphy, host of Hockey Night in Canada, Canucks Hockey on Sportsnet. Plenty of news out of the Vancouver Canucks, including one Brock Besser back on 7 years, $50.75 million, a contract we thought there's no hope to ever see the light of day, because the thought was that Vancouver had no interest in Brock Besser on a long-term deal. This isn't 8 years. He was eligible to get eight. He took seven. But hopefully Dan Murphy can tell me like where the change came to, or the light bulb went off for Jimmy Rutherford, Patrick Alvin on this one, JB.
It is interesting that this wasn't offered prior to that moment. You know, like they just sort of decided last minute to go above and beyond any previous attempts to sign him, it sounds like. And Besser was not under the impression he was coming back. So I can't wait to hear from Dan how he sees how it all played out. God, I loved that goal, by the way.
That was a slap shot.
He just skates into one and shoots it 20 seconds left or something. But yeah, so you mentioned this, Kip. The second you lose a Besser, you're trying to figure out how to get a Besser. You know, you need someone to score goals on your team. He's an American guy who Quinn Hughes probably likes. He doesn't want to see their team take a step backwards. Oh, is it Quinn Hughes related?
Oh, my gosh. You sign a guy to $50 million because you think another guy is likes friends him. But
he's also good.
I would say
it's in the pro side of the pros and con ledger. You know,
for sure.
Doesn't have to be the reason, but.
It's not like bringing in Bronny's. Like Bronny Jr. for LeBron. Like he's a good hockey player. He scored 30 in the league. Yeah. Like he's a good player. But
slagging Bronny Jr.? Or
yes.
Just Bronny, I suppose.
Yes, Bronny.
Yes. Yeah. So that's interesting. The Garland one is funny. You know, you look at the Tavares deal he just signed after a 38-goal season. Garland got 6 years at $6 million. That's a pretty hefty contract. They brought the band back. How do they get better?
Evander Kane.
Oh,
okay. No, not enough.
No, well, it's not nothing if he's healthy. I'm curious to see, because he was hips too, right? Did he get hips done?
No idea.
No, there's multiple issues on him, and I can't confirm it, but it sounds like you're in the vicinity because he had a lot of issues.
The hip bone's connected to the leg bone.
Watching Patrick Kane get his hips figured out and then become a contributor again, is there a chance that Evander Kane can be of value to the Canucks?
I mean, they were pretty good 2 years ago. Like, they went to Game 7 against the Oilers.
I know, and Canucks fans are listening to this, but I was shocked by their success that year.
Okay.
No, but I was. I mean, I didn't think they were.
I guess JT Miller's not there anymore, and it's a different thing.
Do you think Seidel could give him some more?
Do you think this is a signing where it's a message sending to the fans that we're going to make the playoffs next year, or at least our expectations are to make the playoffs next year. And it's funny because a lot of these announcements outside of Evander Kane is just you're bringing back the same players you had before, the same ones that missed the playoffs, right? But a guy that can probably speak more to of this than us here, Dan Murphy, host of Hockey Night in Canada, Canucks on Sportsnet. Murph, thanks for joining us, man. The ball was out. Chalk flew up.
Huh? What?
His T-shirt.
I lost you there. Ask me again, Kipper.
The ball was out. Chalk flew up.
Oh, is that McEnroe on the shirt? Or is it Terry Fox?
John McEnroe.
Oh, it's McEnroe.
I'm right. For those of you that cannot see, we have Dan Murphy on Zoom. He's wearing a classic John McEnroe T-shirt. And the first thought I had was chalk flew up. Are you with me, Murph? Or is it just the first t-shirt you grabbed?
I don't know if there's a connection problem here, Sammy. I'm not sure. Kipper's microphone is kind of all garbled.
Oh, okay, boy. should we reconnect with him?
Yeah, I guess. This is our first ever Zoom issue that we've had. I know. I thought we would. It's almost July. We haven't got this wrinkle figured out.
That's pretty good, for the year.
I feel like
everybody felt on the NHL draft show.
The most awkward moment was at
the Boston Bruins.
Higgins with Boston. They're like, "Oh, what do you want to say to your new pick?" And they like were just nothing. And he was, and he looks at the screen and goes, "Thanks for picking me."
And Ottawa also had issues as well. All right, Murph, we're going to try this again. Take two. You good now?
Not looking good.
No.
I can hear Borny, but Kipper, you're garbled.
I'm garbled.
Oh, I got you.
Oh.
Maybe there's no mic issues and I'm just garbled. You good now, pal?
I'm good, yeah.
All right. Okay. Outside of your John McEnroe t-shirt, let's get to the Vancouver Canucks, okay? What is the message when Brock Besser comes back when really no one thought that was the case all season long?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was something out of the blue. Like, I don't know what odds you would have had to give me to put $1 on him returning in the morning. I'm not sure I would have put a dollar on it.
Yeah.
And something changed. And you can look at it twofold. On one hand, the Canucks, along with probably 28 or 29 other teams, found out just how difficult it was to try to add quality players to the top six. I mean, the prices were too expensive. There weren't any in free agency. It was not possible to do so. And I think when they lost out on Dvorak, which was a target for them, they made a call back to Besser's camp. And, you know, they probably thought too, like, look at this board with Marner off of it. Two of the top three goal scorers on there are guys that we're just letting walk. Should we do this? So they went back to Besser's camp, and on Besser's end, I think the realization hit him just how difficult it was going to be to leave a place he didn't want to leave. He was resigned to it. He was going to test UFA, but when all being called, he's like, get a deal done. They went up in term. They got it to seven. I think the total money he wanted was somewhere around $50 million, and the deal was finished. And I think Besser's happy, and I think the team is happy. Now, what message does it send? I mean, should you be running it back with the same group of guys that missed the playoffs last year, that had one of the most disappointing seasons in a long time, that failed miserably to meet expectations, that had a locker room filled with drama? I mean, a lot of people say, why? But the players themselves say that, yes, there was the locker room issue, but it's not as big as what people are making it out to be. We were hurt all year. Nobody had good seasons. We couldn't stay healthy, and we missed the playoffs by 3 points. We feel that we're a good team, and I think that bringing back Brock Besser, he feels like they're not that far away, even with a new coach. And I think you could even say that with Demko and Garland as well. Like, they were ready to commit, and with Demko, of course, the history with injuries, but Garland willing to sign for 6 more years because I think they believe the team is much better than what it showed last year.
I'll let you just jump in, but just wanted to just say quickly that should we give Brock Besser a little bit of credit here, because it was almost as if it was a foregone conclusion that he wasn't really welcomed back all season long. The trade deadline comes up, and I know we took it maybe differently than when it came out of, I believe, Patrick Alvin, that we couldn't even get a first rounder for him. We could barely get what we, you know, anything for him. And yet the guy didn't tell Vancouver Canucks to go pound salt, you know, the other day.
Well, I mean, this is a two-way street. Brock Besser has, I mean, you see what happened in Toronto with Marner leaving, and there's some vitriol and the fan base is unhappy. If Besser would have left, there would have been nothing but love and sadness, right? Yeah. There's an emotional connection with this player in this fan base and this city. Kind of like he's our guy, right? Drafted, developed, the longest tenured guy, just a model citizen in the dress room, on the streets, with the fan base. We know his history. He has opened up emotionally about the struggles he's had with his family's history of health problems. So I think it's just like he's a player that the people know and love. And I think it kind of goes the other way, too. He did not want to leave. I think he was getting a little anxious and a little nervous. He was ready to test it, and he would have had multiple teams, like upwards of 10 teams offering him the deal. but his heart was in Vancouver. And so he was willing to take, you know, I'm sure he could got 8.5 on the open market, take a little bit more, less money to stay where he's comfortable and to try to help this team that, you know, there's some loyalty there with him as well.
So like 2 weeks ago, they didn't want him.
I think that they're first off, I think they didn't want to give more than 5 years. That was last year. He wanted term.
Yeah.
I think they realized how difficult this was going to be. They still want a center. You know, they went and got Evander Kane. They needed help in the middle six, right? Yeah. They got him. And they couldn't figure out a way to get anyone else. Like, they tried to get Ross.
So what happened with Dvorak? You mentioned his. They couldn't outdo one times 5.4?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that they wanted a centerman. And, yeah. I mean, Dvorak didn't have a great season last year. I don't think that, unless Suter is signed since we've got on this call, I don't think the door is closed on Suter either. I think that if they can move salary and the names out there are Joshua or Bluger, I think they would like to return him to the fold. Because right now, I don't think there's a team in the league that has more question marks with its top two centers in Pettersson and Hedl, right? I mean, there's a million questions there. And then your next two centers after that, as it stands now, are Ratu and Bluger. I think they would love to bring back Suter.
Yeah.
And have him as part of that center group for a little more depth. And if they have to lose one of those other players, so be it. So I don't think that's dead. But when you see Mikael Granlund going for $7 million a year, there might be a chance you can't spend the money on Suter.
You're watching and listening to Dan Murphy, host of Hockey Night in Canada, the Canucks on Sportsnet. So, Murph, Demko gets the number of a top goaltender in the National Hockey League, but doesn't necessarily get the term, only 3 years. But is it still a huge gamble when you consider where he's been health-wise for the Vancouver Canucks?
I mean, there's always going to be a risk. I mean, 2 seasons ago, he's a Vezina finalist, but only played one game in the playoffs. Last year, there was, you know, the Popliteus thing to start it, didn't play until December, had some injuries. All I can say is this, they're confident and comfortable that he's fully healthy now. He's having a full summer of training for the first time in like forever. He's already on the ice, which is earlier than he's ever been on the ice. He's got a new trainer. So they're doing some different things. And the fact that they have Lankinen means they can play them. They can split the games. Mm-hmm. There doesn't have to be a workload that's going to be crazy for Thatcher Demko. They know that Lankinen probably can't play 55, 60, but he can certainly play 40 quality games for you. And if you split the two, I think that's the ideal scenario. So, yes, Demko left some years on the table. The Canucks gave him a little more AAV than they probably would have liked, considering what's happened last year. But again, it's a situation where they're comfortable with it. They think that he can get back to where he was, and they're confident that he will. And, you know, I'll say this too, like, for all the stories out there that the Canucks, you know, obviously last year was a gong show, or whatever the term you want to say, a tire fire, a dumpster fire, all that. The locker room was crazy. Well, you've got three players, one in UFA, Besser, and two players that were, you know, signed on the first possible day they could in Demko and Garland, all Americans, by the way, wanting to stay in Vancouver. So maybe the room isn't quite as bad as we made it out to be, or maybe they feel like that was more blown up than it should have been.
I think that's great, Murph, and I think it's a great sign that even when things are imperfect, people still want to be in Vancouver. I think, you know, you add some success and make it, you know, it can be a real destination for guys. I am curious to know how you think they'll be affected by a change in head coach. Rick Tocchet was a pretty impactful, confident voice. Adam Foote, not been an NHL head coach in the past. Chosen over Manny Malhotra. I don't know if you'd put it that directly that he was chosen over him, but what are your thoughts on the coaching situation this year?
Well, I was surprised by how many times the players on their Zoom calls, Besser this morning and Garland yesterday, mentioned how often they'd talked to Adam already. So clearly the lines of communication are open and fully open. I think that Adam's going to want to be his own guy, but I think one of the big reasons why they chose him is this is a team that still needs to win, right? We all know the Quinn Hughes situation. They don't want to take a step back. They want to push and try to get better. Well, the one area that they're fairly sound is in goal and on defense. If you bring in a guy that's going to totally change the system, you might blow up the first month of your season. And if this team started 5-10-2 because they couldn't grasp a new system that a new coach was putting in place, they're in real trouble. So I think that the fact that Foote is probably going to play a similar defensive system, was a big key in him getting the job, because they feel that side's okay. It's, can we score enough goals? And I'm sure he'll have his own wrinkles, but I think that they were comfortable that the same style of defensive system that Tockett ran, I think Foote will probably run, and I think that went into the decision-making for Foote getting hired.
So you say still needs to win, which equates to needs to make the playoffs, and you bring Evander Kane in. It ain't to rebuild anything, man. They have to present Vancouver Canuck fans a team that they believe should be one of 16 at the dance next spring.
Yep. And like I said, the questions are huge with Pettersson. You're hoping that, I mean, I think it all rests on Pettersson, if I'm being honest, right? He can't be a 50-point guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be an 80-point guy. Maybe he's not going to get back to 100. I'm not sure. But I think the main big question rests at the feet of Pettersson. Hedel, if he's healthy, is he a second-line center? You know, maybe not on a cup team. Maybe he's your third-line center. But for now, they're comfortable going with those two. And if something shakes loose as the season goes on, they'll address it. But I think that they feel like, despite everything that went on last year, we missed the playoffs by 3 points. And it couldn't have gone worse. So let's just pray that we don't have another season where everything that can go wrong goes wrong. What's that? Murphy's Law. and we're going to be okay and make the playoffs. And so I don't think they got worse yesterday, and there weren't a lot of teams that got better yesterday. You know, I mean, Montreal, maybe there are a couple teams, Carolina, I think, but not a lot of teams did what they wanted to yesterday. And the Canucks, even though it was unconventional the way they got around to it, they did address a goal scoring need by bringing back Brock Besser.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to ask you about Quinn Hughes, and everyone talked about a lot of that stuff, the potential for him to eventually leave and go play with his brothers and how real that is. Have we moved into a state where he could be LeBron James and just be like the GM of the Canucks and be like, hey, you know, if you guys want me here, you got to go get this guy. You got to keep this guy. Would he have more of an impact with this looming threat?
I don't think
he'd ever do that. He's too laid back.
I don't think Rutherford kind of gives me that vibe that he's going to let someone dictate.
Right.
I think they will certainly have conversation with him.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be here after next year. I don't know. But I think the one thing that might give fans a little more comfort is nobody's leaving. Any team. Free agents stayed. They had a chance, I think, to, you know, make a wackadoo with this, you know, salary cap going up, and nobody wanted to leave anywhere.
Murph, hold on. No, nobody has two brothers waiting for him.
How can they afford that? And if you were a coach, would you want three brothers on the same team?
God, no. They're calling their own plays at that point. It's too many.
Good point.
It is going to be fascinating to see. You know, I hope it's not much of a story, because the Canucks, it'd be fun to see them.
What does that mean, not much of a story? It's a distraction that will not go away.
No question. Yeah, no question. It's always going to be looming. I get the sense that probably.
What if he just says I don't want to go?
Okay, please get him to say it, and we're good.
I think Quinn is pretty good at saying the right things too, you know, and he is always giving off the loyalty vibe. And I think he'll address it in some way at the start of the season. That'll probably be it. Mm-hmm. Until we get closer to see if the team is a good team or a bad team, we're getting close to the deadline. I think it will all shake out. But there's no question that that's the storyline that's hanging over the season, the entire season, not the beginning of the season.
So Jimmy Rutherford has this reputation. Do we wait for this reputation to kick in? Is there something lurking? Like, there's got to be something big for Jimmy. We know he's itching.
Well, I think Patrick and Jim are always looking, but I just don't know what's available, right? I think that the biggest thing right now might be Suter, and I don't know if they can get that done. But they're always looking to make a big splash. But as we saw, there's just, when every team feels they're one or two moves away from being that much better, no one's selling. And so unless you're willing to really overpay, which the Canucks can't afford to do right now with where the cap's at, then I'm not sure what can be done. But I never put it past him. He's never been shy to pull the trigger, that's for sure.
Murph, great stuff as always. You know, our thanks to you and John McEnroe. all season long, man, coming on our show. We really appreciate it. Have a great one if we don't catch up until the fall. And all the best, pal.
Cabot, next weekend.
Oh, come on. Sure. Go away.
I did St. Lucia.
The interview.
You going to St. Lucia?
Cape Breton, baby.
Cape Breton. I have not done
man.
Cape Breton yet.
10 pitchers.
Okay.
Yeah, I will.
Dan Murphy does an amazing job. He's a pro.
Sent me a video last year of himself playing golf with Adam Hadwin.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, right. And Nick Taylor.
And Nick Taylor. Yeah, like he's in with the Canadian big boy golfers.
Well,
I've played Cap a couple times.
Top in the world right now.
Yeah.
Game time?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. I'll give you guys one guess what I'm going to talk about in game time.
Jays.
I got to tell you, thanks so much for letting me go early yesterday.
Well, you put us over a barrel. We had no chance.
I
just saw the back of your shoes second.
I went full tree on you guys. I extorted you. I was like, I'm going to do.
Not a mention pre-show, nothing. Just
Canada Day.
We looked like real bad guys.
It's outside of a playoff game, it's the best game of the year.
I'd never been to it before, and I got there just in time for the national anthem, and they did the flyover. Whew, gets the juices flowing. But yeah, it was an incredible baseball game, and the Toronto Blue Jays won. George Springer
sure
turning
did.
Back the clock again tonight.
MVP
again tonight. The Toronto Blue Jays, Bet365, our beloved Bet365, giving the Jays no respect again. Underdogs tonight against the New York Yankees. Just one game back now in the division of the New York Yankees.
Wow.
Minus 130, the Yankees are. The Toronto Blue Jays are plus 110 with Jose Berríos on the bump, who has been excellent this year. In his last few starts, he's been really, really good. Just give me the Jays again. Why not tonight again?
Hammering the Jays.
The Jays are hot. And I see no reason why they should not win again tonight. So give me the Jays at plus 110. Yeah, but it feels like Aaron Judge might hit a home run. So give me an Aaron Judge home run at plus 225.
Okay, why not?
So there you go. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Can I, one more quick Jays thing? There's things that happen over a season that make it start to feel like it's going to be a magic season.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jays went down early in that game, right? The sun was beating down. People were getting pulled out. It was so hot.
Yeah.
And it looked like Gausman was struggling a bit. They go down 2-0. He fights through it. And then Jimenez, who you guys probably have the similar power at the dish of him.
Not
a home run hitter. He's had a few this year, more than usual. Max Fried, Cy Young favorite. They're going up against each other. Lefty on lefty matchup. Two men on, and he hits a bomb to dead center field. It must have been
career.
It must have been 410 center field.
Yeah.
Just little things start to make you feel like this might be a different kind of year for the Jays. So George, I was excited.
George Springer, last seven games, 12 hits, 3 homers, 15 RBIs.
Let's mark down July 2nd as the date that Sammy kabukied the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes,
because he did the exact same thing with the Leafs.
What are you talking about? The Leafs
this
did the
feels different this year.
It
with
was
the Leafs.
Different.
Stolers,
they went literally as
Wall.
Far as they've ever
this
gone
is
in this era.
I'm really feeling it now. This is going to be different.
I'm not allowed to be excited about anything.
It was different.
It was different. They went as far as they've ever gone, literally. So yeah, Jays are sick. George Springer, one of the best moments I've had at the ballpark ever was that grand slam yesterday.
When they
amazing
put this
moment.
Show together for the podcast and YouTube, I'm getting Sammy. Deleted from his comments about this year's different for the Blue Jays.
That's a good idea.
I don't think it's, I mean, it's clear.
Were you at the bat flip game?
No. I was at Edwin Encarnacion walk off.
I think we were on the air.
For the wild card. Who was?
I certainly.
I was on the air at Sportsnet.
I was 30
behind Steve.
No. No, this is a while ago.
I was at the walk off Edwin wild card game against Baltimore, which was fantastic. But yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break. When we return, Jason Greger, host of the Jason Greger Show in Edmonton, will join us. We'll talk Oilers, who's in, who's out, and Bouchard, what his thoughts are on that massive 4-year deal.
McDavid?
And a little Connor McDavid. Of course, Sammy, for you and the potential of him becoming a Toronto
Maple Leaf said
Leafs. In your
I
dream
never said
world.
Leafs, bud.
Dream.
There's lots of great teams around the league that he's from the hometown of,
okay,
for sure.
Quiet.
Okay.
Back after these words.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kypreos, Justin Barnes, Sammy McKee.
What's going on with you?
I don't know. I'm just giggling.
At?
Justin's commercial for, thank God you have Jiffy. I'm telling you. Because
Did they just play one of those?
You live in a money pit, man. Your house is rotting. It needs primer, paint. You need wood filler.
Falling apart, dude. My house was built in 1905.
Really?
Either 05 or 12. It's either, I forget, it's one of the two numbers.
So
it's 120 years old.
The year this Titanic sank.
Yeah, well, my house was built out of the wood from the bottom of the ocean.
1912. It used to be a big Titanic.
Buddy, you're going to live in that thing forever. No one's buying it.
No, no one's buying it. Well, you know what? Thanks to all the help from Jiffy, it'll look brand new.
Yes, it will.
Go back to your shanties.
Yes, it will. All right, let's go to Edmonton, where we catch up to Jason Greger, host of the Jason Greger Show on Sportsnet 1440 in Edmonton. Jason, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem, fellas. Doing pretty good.
Yeah, you live in a big mansion out there, right? You don't need any help from anybody.
No, Jiffy.
I'm pretty lucky where we live. Yeah, built our house 8 years ago. So, well, I didn't build it. No, but
awesome.
Yeah.
How's the build of the Edmonton Oilers here? We see some faces going out. It's July 2nd. No race for Connor McDavid to sign a new long-term deal. So, what are your overall thoughts on the last little over 24 hours?
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer that July 1st is where more mistakes than good moves are made historically. Like, there's the odd one. Zach Hyman worked out really well for Edmonton, but Edmonton has about 10 other free agent signings that you'd be like, oof, those didn't pan out. And so Edmonton, I think, took a pretty cautious approach here. I look at the Oilers and I look at their regular season team last year, and then I look at their roster for their regular season upcoming, and I don't see it being much different. I actually think their defense is probably better because Jake Walman will be here to start the year in their top five. And, you know, guys like Evander Kane didn't play all regular season. So, you know, they didn't have him last year. So now basically they have Trent Frederick in the regular season. They'll have Mangiapane, who's probably, I think, going to bring you a little bit more offense. Can he replace 40-year-old Corey Perry's offense, which is crazy to think that Perry scored that much. But, you know, I look at Edmonton and they'll have some new guys. Matt Savoy, they'll give an opportunity. Tomasek, they'll give an opportunity. So there's a few question marks, yeah, but they're kind of similar to last year. And honestly, guys, did any team in the Western Conference really improve?
Did Vegas improve?
Like, they
not
improved.
Sure LA did, yeah.
Right? They improved Marner, but they lost Petrangelo and Hague. Mm-hmm. And so you bring in Lazon and, I guess, Korosek. So I don't know. Like, honestly, I don't know if any of the top teams. Dallas didn't get way better. Mm-hmm. Colorado didn't get way better. Edmonton didn't get way better. They're kind of the same, right? So I think the regular season in the West is going to be about, you know what, who finds their holes and then which GM makes the best moves at the deadline.
So not overly concerned about any of, was it Brown? Who are the guys who all left? Was it four guys? Perry, Brown,
Arvidsson.
You know best.
Arvidsson.
Perry, Brown, Arvidsson, and Jeff Skinner are gone. So they bring in Matt Savoy. They bring in Mangiapane. I think they bring in Frederick. He played 7 minutes in the regular season last year, right? So to me, he's a new regular season guy. And then Tomasek.
So full season with a couple of those guys. The Frederick contract is a good commitment to a player that I really like, and I think that there's a lot more to be found. How much of this is yet to be filled in as they move towards trying to get over the hump and win this Stanley Cup? Is there still more to come for them, or are they built good enough now?
No. I think that I wrote this before free agency. It's hard to get your, like, look at Florida. We could argue Florida won the cup because of their trade deadline moves in Jones and Marchand, right? Now, it obviously helps that you can exceed the salary cap in the playoffs. Let's make no bones about that. But it's legal. It's in the rules, but that helped them. I look at Edmonton, and at the trade deadline, I think they're going to look at three things. Are their goaltenders more secure? If not, they're going to get a goalie. A second pair right defenseman. and a winger. They'll probably get two of those three depending on what's the biggest need.
How fast do they need to get a goalie here? Is it just to appease Connor McDavid? Can they wait? Last time I checked, their goalies have done a pretty good job helping them in the playoffs win rounds and get to a Stanley Cup final. So how much of a pressing need is it, and how does that compare to what's available right now?
Well, Nick, you bring up a great point, because I think there's a lot of people that forgot that Edmonton really kind of cruised to the first three rounds after, you know, they had two bad games, and then they went 12-2, and they walloped Dallas and Vegas, two really good teams. Like, those series weren't even close, right? Vegas wins on an Edmonton own goal. Otherwise, that might have been a sweep. So, and Stu Skinner, 2 years in a row, was infinitely better than Jake Oettinger. He's not Bobrovsky, right? So Florida had the better goalie in the final, no question about that. So I think that they will look. I think they're going to make a change to their goalie coach. And I'm not saying that the goalie coach is the reason why, but sometimes a new voice could help. So I think that's going to come for Skinner. And then, you know, they'll see. I don't see a big rush because, you know, which goalies are truly available? Like, everybody, I saw the rumors, oh, Jake Allen's going to get $5 million. He signed for 1.8. I know he signed for 5 years, but hell, he could have signed 2 years at 10 mil and made the same amount of money. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's a huge, you know, glaring, obvious goalie, but I think it's one they'll look at to see how Stu Skinner does. Stu Skinner, I actually thought he improved in the playoffs, and then he didn't let in really soft goals. Like the third goal in game six, it was a terrible rebound. I don't know what he was thinking, but he didn't let in like weak goals. He just didn't make the big saves. So it's kind of an improvement. And he's a young goalie at 26. There's only seven goalies in the NHL who are younger than Skinner and played more than 20 games last year. Seven. And those guys have a combined three playoff games. Skinner has 50, right? Like he's still a young goalie. I know it's frustrating because, you know what, he's not as good as Bobrovsky, but they're not built to have their goalie steal them games all the time. And he did steal them some games up until the final.
Yeah, it's a tough pill for fans to swallow, right? Like this one thing that they can't, it seems like they can't get right, but you're right. If he was available, there'd be people falling all over themselves to get their hands on him for the number he makes. So I hear what you're saying there. Let's talk a little bit about Evan Bouchard. Signed himself a 4-year, $10.5 million per season contract. What were your initial impressions versus the expectations for that deal?
Well, I kind of thought he was going to be a $10 million guy. So I had actually heard that, you know, they were asking for more on a long-term deal. So 4 years, you know, Bouchard, like this year, Bouchard's security blanket known as Matthias Ekholm wasn't there. And Bouchard was still really good in the playoffs. If you go back and look, the games, game five and six, was more Ekholm's errors than Bouchard's that cost the Oilers on those goals. So I think Evan Bouchard, like he can be a frustrating player at times, because in the regular season, maybe he'll go back to a puck a little nonchalantly and people are like, oh my God, and they remember that play. But meanwhile, he'll make, you know, 50 other good plays in a game that kind of go unnoticed. So he's the guy who shoots the puck the hardest, the most frequently, like 90 mile an hour shots more than anyone. He wasn't a guy who padded all his stats in the power play. He didn't have a power play goal really, I think, until February. So I think Bouchard, in what the market is today for as many points as he gets, it's what you're going to get. Can he frustrate you at times? Yes. But in the playoffs, guys, no one can argue that Evan Bouchard's playoff game is amongst the elite defenders the last few years. His goals against per 60 is actually better than Cale Makar. So I don't know if I'm that surprised by it. I guess 4 years people don't love, but in 4 years, he's either going to continue to mature and then maybe he moves on. But I'd be surprised if Bouchard doesn't give you pretty good value. He will give you a few games and a few plays that people will highlight and focus on, but I think people who do that are probably missing the vast majority of his game, which is pretty darn good.
Jason, we know the challenges on the salary cap for the Edmonton Oilers still to this day. So long-term success, a Stanley Cup, does it include Bouchard and Darnell Nurse making $20 million between them? Is that even an issue now moving forward?
Oh, I think it's potentially an issue for sure. Like, you know, Darnell Nurse is never going to live up to his contract. He's not going to have the offensive numbers that ever live up to it. So he needs to be more consistent defensively. I thought he was good at times, but he doesn't give you the offense to make up for some of the mistakes. Like, he needs to be better when he comes around the net. If the winger's not open, he's got to be able to read the play better and not just, you know, not just throw a grenade up that leads to an icing call. I know that, you know, icings aren't the end of the world if you don't lose faceoffs, but I look at Florida. They won the Cup this past year. Their top six salaries ate up 59.8% of the cap. This season, the Oilers' top six guys, with McDavid, still doesn't have a contract extension, but with their top eight, they'll make up around 60%. So it's not much different, but one of those guys is Nurse. He'll have to be a little bit more consistent, I think, in his play, because Florida had Verhaeghe, and he contributed very well in their Stanley Cup run. So I think it's on Nurse to be better, and I think ultimately long-term, it'll get to a point where either Nurse is going to give them a little bit more consistent play. I thought he was decent this year, but I still think there's more when you're making 9.25. You just need a little bit more.
Jason, I know getting past the LA Kings was not a particularly huge hurdle for the Oilers in recent years, but how did you feel about what they did? A direct competitor, Cody Ceci goes there for four times four and a half. Dumoulin gets $4 million. Armia, Perry. Well, what are your thoughts? The Kings spent like $25 million on guys that were a lot of really.
Yeah, it was an interesting day in LA land. I think they went in, God, we got a lot of money to spend, and there wasn't really a lot of guys to spend on, but they decided they were going to spend on them anyway. Like Cody Ceci and Brian Dumoulin, I'm like, wouldn't you have just signed Gavrikov to $8 million by himself? Like, I don't know if Gavrikov just wanted to leave, because he signed for $7 million in New York. Are you telling me that the Kings didn't offer him $7 million? So I'd love to get to the bottom of that decision for Gavrikov. Did he just want to leave? I know lots of Russian players love playing in New York, so maybe that was part of it. Because right now, if you look at the Kings' blue line, like one of Ceci and Dumoulin, if not both, are going to be in their third pair. It's a lot of money for a third pairing. So I don't think the Kings necessarily got better by any stretch. They might have got a little bit more regular season consistency, but I'm not sure they're better and built for the playoffs. They're going to have to hope that, you know, guys up front continue to get better, right? That Byfield takes a big jump this year. Fiala continues to do what he does. And Brant Clark, I think, on the back end is the guy they're going to look at to take a jump. Yeah. But I agree with you. They spent a lot of money that I'm kind of like, hey, I love Corey Perry. He just had an unreal year. But he's basically guaranteed $3.5 million.
Yeah.
Right? Like his playoff bonuses are $500,000. But $3.5 million. And I know he scored 19 goals. Now, maybe he'll do it again. Maybe he's just the ageless wonder. But
probably not.
Yeah, it's a risky bet, yeah. Right? Like, it's a pretty risky bet for me.
How much are they going to miss Corey Perry? Like, he went from a constant thought of minimum salary, fourth line guy, maybe in and out of the lineup, to being a real important guy.
Well, the thing about Perry, like, he scored big goals, guys, but it's funny, like, his goals, four goals against 5-on-5 in the playoffs weren't very good. So he scored a lot, but then he was on the ice. Not saying he was the only problem when they give up goals, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's give or take. And if you score lots, but then you're on the ice for a lot against, well, that's not great. So they'll miss Corey Perry, I think, in the room. He's a calming factor. That Perry knows when to show up for games. That's the one thing he's very good at, right? Like he can bring them into a fight at times. And I think maybe that's why LA got him, is they're like, hey, we need a guy that can calm us down in the playoffs, where, because you look at LA in games 3 and 4, they kind of self-destructed against Edmonton. They made some pretty bad decisions. And so I think Ken Holland's thinking maybe Corey Perry and Draisaitl and McDavid have both talked about it. Like, Corey Perry's an incredibly smart player, and he's incredibly calm and knows when to speak up at the right time and what to say. He doesn't rah-rah all the time. And a lot of times he speaks up with his actions on the ice. And I think they will miss him there more than anywhere else. And they're just, but the Oilers, they better have other guys in the room now that have been through back-to-back cup runs that they'll know when's the right time to stand up and speak.
All right, I cannot let you go without asking you about Connor McDavid and what the heck is going on here. Everybody tells me, hey, Leon Draisaitl didn't sign till like the end of August, September. Guess what? I love Leon. He ain't Connor, okay? And the reason why it may have gone to September is because Edmonton may have not wanted to hit that 14 number. This is majorly different for Connor McDavid. Yeah. This ain't about 14, 15, 16. It's about, hey, Connor, you tell us what you want to make and we'll sign it tomorrow. So What are we about to see here in the next little while or not see?
Well, a few things with Drysdale. I actually was told that that $14 million number was one that they kind of had in March. But they weren't going to sign the Drysdale deal until Stan Bowman took over in late July, and then they had the offer sheet stuff, so it got delayed. I think in Connor McDavid's case, I don't think he's going to sign to 8 years. And why would he? I have argued for years, guys. Like, the NHL took a step towards my argument. I always thought 5 years max is what it should be. So they reduced it by one. And I bet you on the next CBA, it'll be 6 and 5, and that'll be fine. So I think McDavid for two reasons. You go 3 or 4 years because, A, you can maximize it as the highest paid guy in the league. Look at the cap's going to be, guys, in 3 years. $118 million probably after 113. Like, it's nuts. So why would you sign long term as an elite player in the league? I would never do that. And then number two, it gives him a chance to see, okay, where are we at? Like, he could, if he's going to play out this year and then leave, where is he going to go that gives him a better chance to win than Edmonton? Colorado? That's it, right? Like, maybe MacKinnon and Makar. There's no other team that has a Draisaitl, right? So where else would we go to think, hey, I got a better chance? He's going to take his time. I think this contract will be done. The term, everybody's going to get up in arms out, but I think shorter term is better for elite players. I know that some fans don't like to hear that, but if I'm an elite player and I'm looking at my career, I'm going to go short term all the time because I can maximize my earnings, still be competitive, and force my team to remain competitive.
Jason, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciated not just today, but your efforts all season for our show.
Hey, boys, love coming on, man, anytime. Have a good off season.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, and have a good one yourself.
Jason Gregor. Jason Gregor's show in Edmonton, 1440.
So he'll sign a four-year contract?
Yeah, so really, at the end of the day, he's just wants to protect his status as being the best player in the world, so you don't lock into eight. So it's really just about the money for him moving forward here, or do you believe it, Jason, in terms of, like, there's nowhere for him to go?
Well, I mean, there's different places for him to go that have comparable opportunities. I think Edmonton is in a group of 7-8 teams that if he goes to those teams, they're instantly the favorite, right?
Yeah. What are you giggling at
nothing,
over there?
Nothing.
But your team hasn't won a cup since 67.
I know. I'm aware of that.
So will he be the difference maker in a year from now?
Maybe the greatest hockey player to ever touch ice could make a difference.
Toronto's the last place that guy would ever go.
I think that's wrong. I think that's not true.
I think it's either super true or super wrong.
I think he'd rather go here than, you know, like Seattle.
Columbus. Yeah, I don't believe it's the last place. But I do think that he's one of two ways on Toronto. He would either really find it appealing or really not find it appealing. I bet you really not find it appealing.
He just, there's no way you could totally hedge anything, but he's got to get his cup. He's 0-2 right now in a final.
No better chance in Toronto. I think Edmonton is a much better chance.
I believe he's going to stay, and I do believe it'll be a shorter-term deal.
But 17?
He's 28 now?
Yep.
So if he signs a four-year deal and he doesn't win a Stanley Cup, now he's looking for a new team at 32?
Then he's Kevin Durant. He starts flipping around all the different teams looking for a win.
I'd hate to see that.
Me too, but he needs one, bud. That's all that matters to him. I actually really believe that he's not hungry for money. Like, the last contract he signed, what'd he take? Took less. The PA was pissed off at him because he didn't take as much as he should have.
Remember when was it Timo Solani and Paul Kariya played for like $1 million each in Colorado that one year?
Yeah, and they didn't win.
No, they weren't close.
They didn't even come close.
Him and Leon been training now for about a week.
Mm.
Is that true?
With Gary Roberts.
Yeah, it's too much.
He's in town.
It's too much. Yeah, no, I saw a picture of him and Matthews get sent to me, but I don't know if that was from this summer or last summer, but they're having dinner at some point. Yeah.
Oh, no, this guy's already
locked in. They do have a relationship, those two. Mm-hmm. So that's nice.
Already locked in.
Very admirable, man. They're committed.
For sure. I think they probably gave himself, what, 2 weeks off? Week off? And then get back in the ice?
I was myself, like, 3 weeks or something. Yeah. You know, I'm not them, and I was done way earlier in the season, so it was easy for me, but...
All right. I want to touch on this before we go here. Carolina Hurricanes.
Oh, yeah, right.
The owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, Tom Dundon, has a bit of a reputation for being a tough negotiator.
Bit of a cheapo?
A little little alligator arms. They don't quite reach the pockets.
Bit of a cheapo is what you're saying.
And all of a sudden, boom! Kendra Miller, $60 million, no problem. $60 million.
For Stankoven, too. A bunch of money.
Like
Stankoven got $48 million.
So Kendra jumps into Carolina now and becomes the highest paid defenseman. And I don't, Slavin's their best guy.
Yeah.
And he, I think, I'm not even sure he started his new contract. And it's probably got to be about $2 million less than Miller.
Oh, Slavin?
Slavin.
No, Slavin makes like 6.4. What's he make here? I'll tell you right now. He makes 6.4. So he makes 1.1 less.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But clearly, Kendra Miller does not come in and become Carolina's best defenseman.
No, but it's like, it's one of those things where this is what Carolina is trying to do, is to try to sign contracts where you're getting value on guys. And that's
good on Tom Dundon. I mean, yeah. It's a good sign moving forward that he's now spending money and he needs to win a Stanley Cup too.
Yeah.
And like, Slavin's contract's best in the league. I just looked at it right now. It's absurd.
Yeah. Is it started?
Yeah, he makes 6.4 until 2032.
Yeah.
Is that 8 years? Count for me.
He
signed an 8-year contract worth 51.17.
And it kicks in.
And he signed it last July 1st.
Okay, so it kicks in now.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean.
It's Why did he sign that?
I don't know. Because nobody, it takes guts to bet on yourself. Well, that's why.
And defense first D-men have a tougher time getting to big numbers. Because what do you point to?
You're right.
You know, it's.
Did you see our list of top 25 hockey players? Did you guys get that?
No.
Top 25.
Sportsnet.
Generally?
Yeah, somebody just sent it to me. Do you remember voting for it?
Yeah.
I think I remember voting for it, too.
Yeah. Huh.
But I don't. We'll find it. We'll get it in our show tomorrow.
Okay. But yeah, well, we need something to talk about.
There's some guys I'm shaking my head at on the list.
What's he doing in there?
No, he's in there.
I'm joking. That's the joke.
Stankoven in there?
No.
Pizzetta?
No. So something to look forward to
25
tomorrow.
25 NHL players?
Yeah. You know, Carolina is, I am curious to see how it shakes out. They still have these first round picks. Are they going to try to do the Ehlers thing in the next 48 hours? And will they do more?
How good is Ehlers?
Not that good.
What do you have, 60 points?
He has one season where he played 18 minutes a game and he had like 70 points. It was like a career high for him.
Someone's going to pay him $8 or $9 million.
I mean, in this cap era, it's not that devastating. Like even this Keandre Miller deal, that's Morgan Riley money, you know? And by the time that cap goes up, you look at how some of these guys that skate well are big, as D takes a while to come around. Look at Seth Jones. All of a sudden it's like, God, how good was he en route to winning a cup?
I do like the raw tools with Miller. Yeah. Rangy, offensive upside, great skater, long.
Took a step backwards last year.
No question.
And different system. Get him cheap.
Everything I hear, he's got to get his head on straight.
It's fair.
Right? Yeah.
I'm sure. I wouldn't.
Fresh start in a much smaller community.
Yeah. $60 million bucks. Will that help you keep it on straight or?
Or the opposite.
I don't know.
Me or him?
Me. Uh-oh.
Well, we'll see. We're still waiting on a few deals, but there's not really any massive names left out there, guys.
Tomorrow we'll break down the Jack Roslovic contract. Mm-hmm. And
tell you what we think of Travis Boyd. I mean, by the way, you know.
Letary?
Nice American. What's the guy's name? That the guy can help.
Vinny Letary, the Leafs signed today?
Vinny Letary.
Yeah.
Olivier Giroux.
Yeah.
Dakota Mermis is back.
Good stuff. Lots. How about the Kings? Oh, my God.
I would say the Kings took the largest step back.
They
had a lot of money to spend spent it on.
Oopsies.
Do they have room for Bo
Byram? He's out there. He's got to get traded. We had Elliot on yesterday talking about they got to move him or else they're going to get locked in and take him right to unrestricted free agency. Okay, our thanks to Brad Tree Living, manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Dan Murphy, Hockey Night in Canada, Canucks, and Jason Greger, covering the Edmonton Oilers. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. We're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.